Our second guest for Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday on the World Cafe is Odetta, who was born on New Year's Eve, 1930, was raised in Los Angeles, and became one of the premier voices of the civil rights movement. She died this past December at the age of 77. This conversation took place in 2004, and I started out by asking her about singing at the Lincoln Memorial at the March on Washington in 1963, when Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech.
Well, I'd like to take you back a little further than that.
Mm.
There was a woman who refused to get off of the seat in the bus. There was a minister who stood behind her. There was a community throughout the country who stood up in back of this man by the name of Martin Luther King Jr. Now, all through this country, there were people working on the problems that they had in their own neighborhoods. So the muscle was being developed at that time when Martin Luther King came along, and we could try to turn the other cheek. I don't think any of us believed turn the other cheek, but we see how far that would go. We knew it would go further than confronting guns and bullets, all right? So there was a stirring in this country that was just ready for Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Now, as I was coming along in the late 40s and 50s, and I was, as a hobby, I had folk music and a guitar. I was studying a voice at that time for classical music, and the folk music seemed to do with more of where I came from,
mm-hmm.
and my folks and my people, and the struggle of us as civilians within this country. So all of that is brewing and stewing. And so when he appeared to our consciousness, our sight, we got right in back of him and would try that. It was the most exciting time I've ever had in the world.
Hmm.
To see people pulling and working together who, if they were strangers before, would even be shy to say hello to each other. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I also understand that you were good friends with Bayard Rustin, who is the man who introduced Dr. King to the concept of nonviolence.
I had met him, but I don't claim myself as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really hang out that much, you know. And people heard of what I was doing. Our intellectuals and our politicians, and what I was doing, the folk music, fit into what their work was. And so they called me in, and I was really the shy kid sitting on the side waiting for them to tell me, or someone to tell me, that it was time to go and do the song.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting that folk music was your vehicle. How did you choose what to sing at any of these, in Selma or on the March in Washington?
Well, if we go back to spirituals, and we go back into what my history was, it's a given. It's there already. The songs are "Oh Freedom," okay? That's from a long time ago, and we're still looking for it. I'm on my way. Another spiritual. So there wasn't an awful lot of decision as to, oh my God, what am I going to do for that program? It is which one.
Odetta doing a medley of spirituals, some of which were ones that she had a chance to perform at the March on Washington in August of 1963. What was the crowd's response to the music? Do you remember singing
Oh,
the steps?
Stop it. Are you kidding me? I did good to remember what I had for breakfast this morning. I didn't record that, but I'm not sure I record what an audience response is until after I finish the song. While doing it, I'm in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is either polite, or it's stronger than that, or it's yelling and clapping and hollering and stuff. But, I would assume that back in those days, since the music was addressing what we as civilians were addressing, that it was all pretty uplifting and open and giving.
Do you remember who else performed that day?
I don't. I just remember being totally floored by the sight of all those people way back to Cleopatra's Needle and people. And I'm thinking of the kinds of things that people had to go through in order to even afford the bus to get on it, to ride to Washington, D.C. The feeling of unity and communion is really quite something. I do remember, however, the camera lights, the television camera lights were on. I think there's a few documentary kind of films that where they you could see I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got up to sing, I think everybody all the film crew went to lunch because all the camera lights that were red before I got on went to out. And so there's an awful lot. That kind of hurt also. I think many times we think in terms of popularity of the person, and they will turn the camera on for somebody, but because they have a big following or they earn a lot of money, and then they're to turn the camera off for instead of just filming the whole thing. It's like not too long ago. With the marathon race here, there was a young black African who was winning the race. He had gone off the wrong path, and people, helped him get back onto Fifth Avenue, and he won the race anyway, mm-hmm. even with that little detour. And the television cameras did not take him winning, crossing the line. They took the picture of the white man who came in second. You see, so we're still there. It's not like this wound is completely healed. There're just times and things when I really get kind of furious and angry. And I thought, after all this time and all these people working towards some kind of unification and some kind of rightness and righteousness and honor and whatever, we still have to go back and redo it. Well, let me end it this way. I'm happy that Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday has not been turned into a sales day. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm also interested in your performing career, as you mentioned, going back to the 40s and the 50s. You were one of the few people singing these songs. And when you would get in front of an audience, did you embrace the fact that you had kind of a larger context in what you were doing? I mean, Odetta, clearly you weren't just entertaining people. You were presenting, Black history before anybody even knew what that was, that was what was, being done.
I did mention I was a shy kid, but I think that I was out there enough to follow what my sense of things were.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't come with crystal balls and we don't see ourselves objectively. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
So we're either in the moment or dreaming about the moments I just left, you know.
Mm.
So I always wanted to sing. Music was always the focus. And the folk music had more to do with real life and our lives than did the classical music. I still love the classical music, but as far as my being of some kind of service and use to humanity, the folk music is the area that I need to, as a matter of fact, that was my school. It was, that was my teachings. You know, they told me in grammar school, as we were reading about slavery, that the slaves were happy and singing all the time. And it was at a time that when I felt, I think all of us have gone through this time, it couldn't be in the book if it weren't true. And I believed, I swallowed that thing, and it damaged me. I still have scars from that. But it shot me then, the music put me in a position where those who were actually working on the problems could come and I could be of service to them. So I had no view of how I was perceived. I still don't. I doubt that you have a view of how you are perceived.
Well, it's interesting that history you learned in school books, obviously, we've all learned, were written by not particularly the people in the situation. How do you mean when you say that the scars stayed with you from that? Was it just learning that that wasn't the truth?
First of all, to read it, that was the wound, to read it. And as I said, I believed it. A little black girl, little black boy growing up in this country, going to see Hollywood films. We were insulted via the film. We were always servants. We were clowns. And all of that was put into what the making of what that scar was. There were places that we knew. My sister and I grew up in Los Angeles, and they didn't have any signs, but we knew where we shouldn't go. And so you have young ones growing up in this kind of an atmosphere, and of course we're scarred, you know? I mean, I just beg your pardon. I mean, it's just so obvious that that's not the way to bring up a healthy human being.
Absolutely.
And through going into the folk music, reading the narration of those who gave the music to the collectors, reading the black history, all of that was not left, not put in our school books, was the things that the area and the music that straightened my back and kinked my hair. Now, what I mean by that is, back there in the 40s, we were all doing, women were straightening their hair so that it would look closer to white a person's hair. And I, when I got all this information and I started feeling really good about myself and proud of what I've came from, the strength that I've come from as, we as a black community, I cut my hair and washed it, and what is called an afro or a natural today was called then an Odetta. And in the very first review that I got in the Times, Robert Hagen described me as a Bessie Smith with a crew cut.
Well, just having the Bessie Smith day, that's pretty good
crit. Yeah, that's good company, right?
Definitely good company. History is a continuum, and it continues on. Odetta, thank you so much for talking with us today.
God bless you. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye, David.
The late Odetta, recorded in 2004 for a special Martin Luther King Day celebration at the World Cafe.